We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Cash Considerations Podcast, a Chicago Bulls podcast, where we're always putting boots to asses. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm with Jason Pat as always. Jason, what's going on, man?
I'm doing all right. I'm obviously doing a bit better than Chicago Bulls are lately with in the middle of a 7-game winning streak, but we have a special episode here today.
This is a special episode because we have our first ever guest in Cash Considerations history.
Am I really the first guest you guys have ever had?
You are.
You are the first guest, and it's Sean Hyken, the NBA Sean Hyken, writer at many different outlets, primarily Bleacher Report, formerly a Bulls beat writer at The Athletic. Sean was back on the Bulls beat briefly this week when they went to visit Portland. Sean, you covered the Trailblazers game. That was probably the best Bulls game of the week, maybe, which is saying something. On Wednesday night, the Bulls lose to Portland 124-112. Pretty entertaining game back and forth. Sean, you were there, so I just wondering, you know, what was it like to be back around the team, and you know, what sort of vibes were you picking up from the Bulls these days? Because God, now 10-33, this has not been a fun season for fans like Jason and I to watch, and I can't imagine the players are having a better time than we are.
Well, you know, it was fun to kind of jump back on the Bulls beat. I covered that game for NBC Sports Chicago. I had a few columns off of that game that, you know, I tweeted out. If anybody wants to go check them out, they're probably kind of outdated now because there's been a couple of games since the game in Portland. But it's, you know, it was fun to kind of see everybody. Although I will say, just with how much turnover there's just been in such little time since I've been off the beat, this is only my second season not being on the beat and not being in Chicago anymore. There are only four guys on the team that were on the team my last full year on the beat, which is just, it's just crazy how much turnover there's already been.
So who are those four guys? It's probably Rolo, yeah. Portis, Big Chris, and then
Denzel, who was on the trip and is out the year. Yeah.
Did any of the players remember you when you walked into the locker room? Was Robin Lopez dapping you up?
All four of the guys who were there when I was there. I mean, I was there for like two games of last season, but I obviously like Zach LaVine and Lowry Markkanen and like some of the guys who came there last year, none of those guys know me because I wasn't around long enough. But yeah, Bobby and Robin and Cristiano, those guys, I definitely was able to catch up with all of them, which was cool. But it was just kind of crazy just how different the locker room was. It was a lot of, you know, and even Fred Hoiberg, who was a guy that I covered for his first two full years as Bulls coach, he's not there anymore. I knew Boylan a little bit because he was an assistant under Hoiberg, but it was a very different group. But, you know, they seemed like they were in okay spirits as much as you can be when you were at the time 10-31. And, you know, that game, they were actually pretty competitive in that game. They obviously weren't going to win, just, you know, it was on the road. You know, the talent gap is just too high. You know, the Blazers, you know, they have, you know, one of the best scoring backcourts in the league. And, you know, Yusuf Nurkic has been playing incredible lately for them. And that, you know, the Bulls on the other side are, you know, playing Shaq Harrison as their backup three, and he's 6'4". Like you know how that's going to go from the start. But you know, I thought they were pretty competitive, and I thought they look like they're kind of in a good spot in terms of how the guys should be developing and all that. And then of course, you know, two nights later they go out and they get blown out by 37 to the Warriors. So that was fun.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's just Ned. How do you think? Like, what do you see? Where do you see this Bulls rebuild going? Like, how do you like? Just do you think this is going to go well? Like, what is there anything specific you saw out of any of the players up close, or just like in general over the course of the season? Like, do you think this thing's going to work? Or you think it's going to? I mean, it's obviously very bad right now, but is there any like major positives you think that they have to build on right now?
Well, I think they have three guys that you can really look at and say, this is going to be a piece going forward that we're going to be able to build around long term. And those three pieces obviously are Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter. Carter in particular was terrific in the game in Portland that I saw. You know, he had 22 points, 7 of 9 shooting. He even hit a corner three, which he said he's trying to, you know, shoot more threes. He looked pretty good defensively. And for a 19-year-old, I think he has a lot of awareness at that end of the floor in particular. I think he's going to be a good player for a long time. Markkanen struggled in that game, but, you know, he's a guy where, you know, he's working his way back from an elbow injury. You have to think he's going to get more comfortable. He's going to, you know, Jim Boylan was talking about how he wants him to be more selfish and he wants him to look for his own shot more. And, you know, you can see obviously the talent and, you know, the year he had as a rookie last year. I think he's going to be a really good player for them. And then LaVine, you know, whatever you want to say, obviously he's not a good defender. He has there's some holes in his game. He's kind of a black hole, but he clearly can score. He can get to the basket. He is a good outside shooter. There are, you know, things that you can point to that say, okay, you know, he's going to be a good, you know, scorer out on the wing for the long term. So I think they have a few pieces to build around. I'm kind of with Ricky because, you know, as a loyal Cash Considerations listener, I know all about your guys' draft takes. I'm kind of with Ricky in that, you know, they need to, if they can get Zion, that makes the whole thing look a lot better than it does now. But, you know, I think they have a decent enough foundation. It's just a matter of, you know, are they going to be able to put the pieces around them and hire the coach, the right coach long term? And, you know, with this organization having the track record that it does, that's kind of a big if. But, you know, at least they, you know, they have a couple of, they're not the Orlando Magic of like the first couple of years after the draft. It's not like they have nobody that they can build around. They have a few guys.
What do you think about Chris Dunn? Because you did not mention him. You talked about Lowry, Wendell Carter, Zach LaVine as three main guys. What do you think about Chris Dunn's future with the team?
I think he's going to be a good NBA player. I don't think you can look at him and say, oh, this is, you know, guaranteed, you know, our starting point guard going forward. Like for example, if whatever draft position, I haven't done as much draft, you know, scouting and stuff as maybe Ricky has, but if they're at the point where, you know, it's their pick in the draft and the best player in available at their spot is a point guard, I don't think Chris Dunn is so good that you can't say, oh, we can't take a point guard because we have Chris Dunn. I don't think he's that level of like a foundational guy to build around. But, you know, with, you know, what he's able to do defensively, you know, I think he's very versatile on that. And I, you know, his offense obviously has to get a lot better before you can look at him and say this is a long-term piece to build around. That's why I didn't include him in that group of like guys that they're definitely going to be building around long term. But, you know, I think at the very least he's a good, you know, third guard or a backup that, you know, can help a lot of teams, you know, whether it's, yeah, whether he stays in Chicago long term or whether he, you know, ends up going somewhere else. I think he's a guy who's going to be carving out a nice role for himself in the league. I just don't know if he's going to be long term. This is a starting point guard on a contending
team. What I'm curious about, Sean, is for those who don't know, the last season you covered was the Three Alphas year, right? So yes. I'm curious, yes, just how the mood around the team in the locker room has changed from then. Obviously, back then you had a really dominating personality in Jimmy Butler, a really dominating personality in Dwayne Wade, and then you had Rondo in that mix too. Now, you know, I would just assume that sort of the vibes around the locker room and the vibes around the team are completely different, given that it's a young team. They're getting pounded for the second straight year, you know, once again with the chance of getting the first pick in the draft. I'm just sort of curious, you know, what's it like in that locker room, and how do you compare and contrast it from, you know, from your time with the Three Alphas era?
Well, it's definitely different when you don't have a Jimmy Butler or a Dwayne Wade and that level of personality where they just take up all the oxygen in the room. I guess Zach LaVine is like, by default, that guy now, because, you know, he's a big personality. He's very gregarious. He's very outgoing, but he doesn't have the same kind of gravitas that Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade aspire to, or that they, you know, sometimes brought to the locker room in both positive and negative ways during that year that they were there. But, you know, it's a lot of guys, you know, they're younger guys. It's a lot looser. It's not a lot of guys who have really accomplished that much in the league to this point. So it's not a lot of guys who are, you know, walking around acting like, you know, they're a star or they're they deserve to be treated a certain way. It's a lot of just kind of young guys who are still trying to prove themselves. You know, the longest tenured guy on the team at this point is Bobby Portis, which is wild. But it's definitely a different dynamic when you have not, you know, the type of personalities that they maybe had the three alphas year or before that when you had like Joakim Noah, you know, Taj Gibbs and somebody like that, and they had been there for a long time and just commanded a lot of respect.
Interesting, yeah, because Jimmy and Wade were, and I was not in the locker room, but those guys were goofballs.
That was a fun year. Like you could just tell going in any day, like if you're just in the locker room before the game, not a lot of guys really talked on the record or did media availability before the game, but you know, guys would be in and out, and you could always just tell from the beginning what kind of Jimmy day it was going to be. Like,
oh,
he would come in, some days he would come in and he was just like loose and he was joking around with people and just kind of, you know, cracking jokes with people, and you could be like, okay, you know, this is going to be good. And then there were some days where I don't know whether it was something in his personal life that was bothering him, but some days he would just come in just looking really, you know, all moody, not talking to anybody, and you were just like, okay, he's going to give us nothing tonight from a media standpoint. Like you could just tell right away going in what kind of day it was, and it was always going to be kind of one or the other.
Interesting. All right, I guess staying in like the locker room, since there was obviously a big change in the locker room, we also had some big news in terms of head coach Jim Boylan. One of the big news over the weekend was that he got a raise. It came out on Saturday after the Bulls got their ass beat by the Warriors. What was like 146 to 109 or something like that. After they got smoked by the Warriors earlier this season, and then they got smoked by them again. And then Saturday, Joe Colley of the Sun Times reports that Jim Boylan gets a raise for not only this season, but through next season. He's getting paid $1.6 million this season. And then next season, he's guaranteed, this is per Woj, Adrian Wojnarowski, $1 million next season out of a $1.6 million deal total. So that obviously, you see that after a game like the Warriors game where they get their ass beat, they're in the middle of a six-game losing streak, and people went wild. And my response, I was out at a bar, I was drinking, so I was not exactly sober. So I see this on my phone, I'm naturally mad as well. And bunch of people are mad, don't understand why they're doing it. Of course, it really looking at it, it's really not that big a deal. Sean, what do you make of the Boylan raise, the timing of it? Is it actually a big deal in the grand scheme of things? Just what do you think about that?
Well, the timing is absolutely hilarious coming a day after they get blown out by 37 points to the Warriors. But you know, I'll say this, even as far as the timing is concerned, it's not like the front office, you know, watched that game and were like, we really need to get this Jim Boylan raise done right now and do this. It just because it came out that day doesn't mean that it got done that day. Like, it's the kind of thing where that had been in the works for a while. And I really don't think, and I get it. I've been around Bulls Twitter and the Bulls fan base for a long time, and I know kind of what track record the organization has. So I get it. I totally get why the first reaction was to just completely freak out about a news like this. But it really is not that big of a deal, and it's just the kind of thing that you knew was going to happen eventually. Like, Jim Boylan did not sign an extension with the Bulls. He was under contract for next year anyway. I believe the reported figure was, what, $800,000 was his salary when he was the associate head coach under Fred Hoiberg?
Yeah.
So essentially what happened with, you know, Woj was the one reporting that, you know, his salary is now 1.6 for this year, and then 1.6 for next year, but only 1 million of it is guaranteed. Basically, all they did was they doubled his salary for this year, which I think is reasonable considering that he was in the middle of the season thrust into a job that has a lot more responsibilities than his old job. So giving him a nice bump in pay, I think, is a fair thing to do for him there. And then they just guaranteed him an extra $200,000 for next year over what he was going to be owed anyway. And so, I mean, this is such a common thing. Like, I know that this was also kind of a high profile thing because he didn't just accept it right away. But earlier on in the season, when the Cavs fired Ty Lue and they wanted to make Larry Drew the new head coach, he said, okay, I'm going to do it, but you guys have to give me a little bit more money and you guys have to guarantee me a little bit more money for next year. Because, you know, when you're paid like an assistant coach and suddenly you're asked to be a head coach, it's reasonable to ask for a little bit more money. I don't think this for sure, you know, locks in that he's going to be their head coach next year. I think the bigger thing with that is going to be what happens with Fred Hoiberg, because he's still owed $5 million for next season. So if Fred takes another job and they're off the hook for at least some or all of that money, then I think that makes it a little bit more likely that maybe they'll look at things this summer and decide they want to make a change. But at the very least, you know, all this really was just, you know, they wanted to, you know, give Jim Boylan a little bit extra money to reflect what his job is now versus what his job was when he signed that contract, which I think is reasonable. And I don't think it's nearly as big of a deal as a lot of people were making
it out
to be.
So I agree with you, Hyken, that Boylan, you know, absolutely did deserve a raise. I believe there's no NBA coach making less than $2.5 million this season. And Boylan, he's going to be at now 1.6 moving forward. So that really isn't the issue to me. I'm glad the Bulls took care of him a little bit. Honestly, he should be making even more money. But the problem is that Jim Boylan's fucking terrible. He does not deserve to coach another NBA game. You know, you dealt with him a little bit after the Portland game. I know that media members don't have a ton of access to assistant coaches. Is that correct? So I'm assuming you didn't talk to him much during that Three Alphas year.
I remember one story that that he helped me out on, which was a story I wrote early on in the Three Alphas year where I was talking about how one of the reasons the Bulls were successful defensively was because they were, you know, keeping teams off the foul line and not, you know, committing a lot of fouls on that end. And so since Boylan was kind of the de facto defensive guy on Fred's staff, I went to him and he was very helpful to me for that story. I always thought he was a good guy. I never really, I certainly didn't have the kind of relationship with him where I knew that, you know, things were going to go the way they went with some of the stuff he's saying to the media now that he's the head coach. As far as, you know, I hear what you're saying as far as, you know, how you feel about, you know, the job he's done so far. Do I think that he's the long-term coach for this team? No, I don't. But they also, you know, they elevated him to the head coach. It's so rare for any team to make an actual change in the middle of a season when they fire a coach in terms of bringing in an outside coach. It's usually somebody on staff finishes out the year. I think the only time I can remember that a team fires a coach in the middle of the year and then brings in a coach totally from the outside who wasn't already in the organization was a few years ago when the Kings fired Mike Malone and then they made Ty Corbin the interim. And then they went to the step of removing Ty Corbin's interim tag and saying, oh, he's going to be the coach for the rest of the season. And then a month later, they go in and actually say, oh, you know, actually, we're going to go bring in George Karl. That's going to be our coach now. And then, you know, that was kind of shady the way it happened. But I hear what you're saying about, you know, you said you think Jim Boylan is terrible. You don't think he should coach another NBA game. This team is so bad anyway this year. It's not like getting a new coach in there right now in the middle of the season. First of all, the amount of candidates that are out there right now that, like, there's going to be a better – if they decide they want to make a change and bring in a more long-term coach, there's going to be a bigger pool of candidates to choose from this summer because, you know, there are going to be teams – you know, the season's going to be over. There are going to be teams that make changes. There just inevitably always are teams that change out their coaches in the off season. And so, you know, there are going to be some people coming available that maybe are going to be more desirable than, you know, who's out there right now. And the team is so bad anyway. It's not like if they bring in a different coach from the outside right now that suddenly, you know, now they're going to make the playoffs or now they're going to be a little bit less embarrassing than they are right now. So you might as well just keep it going in-house. I don't really see any downside to him coaching the rest of the season. Now, it'll be interesting to see again what happens this summer and, you know, whether Fred Hoiberg getting another job or not, you know, changes their willingness to maybe look to outside candidates in the summer. But I don't think it really would have made a lot of sense for them to actually bring in an outside coach.
Well, the problem is they already had a better coach in Fred Hoiberg. And, you know, you said that you don't think the Bulls are doing too much damage with Boylan coaching the rest of the year. I somewhat agree in a sense, just because I feel like the only real chance the Bulls have towards finding any level of contention in the next couple of years is by landing the first pick, getting Zion Williamson. Boylan just actively sabotaging this roster every chance he gets is benefiting that tank race. But I also wonder what sort of effect Boylan and his offensive methods are having on some of the cornerstone pieces of this roster that you mentioned. In the last three games, since Jason and I recorded the last podcast, Lauri Markkanen, 34 total points, I think, on 37 shots. So he's in a rough stretch right now. Throughout January, his three-point attempts are way down. The Bulls as a team have taken the least amount of three-pointers in the NBA since Boylan took over. If you want to look at the season-long stats and three-point attempts, the Rockets lead the league at taking 44 threes a game. The Bulls are dead fucking last in the league, 22.8 attempts per game from three-point range. Jim Boylan has his team playing slow, walk-it-up basketball. He has them playing inside out, pounding the ball into the paint. Every game, he keeps citing points in the paint as if it matters when they're getting beat by 30 from the three-point line. I think this is completely insane, Hyken and Jason, and I'm curious, you know, what you guys think, because the level of outrage that came from Bulls fans following the Boylan contract news, it was only outrage because this guy's terrible. And, you know, I do wonder if he's actively hurting the long-term development of the cornerstone pieces on this roster. How ridiculous is that concern from your perspective?
Well, I don't think half a season with an interim head coach, I mean, I know he's technically not the interim head coach. They didn't give him that tag, but half a season with a guy who's not going to be the coach long term, I don't think that's going to completely ruin the development of a 19-year-old. These guys are so young. They have such long careers ahead of them. It's not like, you know, oh, they played half a season of really slow, antiquated basketball under Jim Boylan, and now these guys are ruined forever in their development. I don't think that's really a fair thing to put on them. You know, certainly the way that things are going right now, like it's not a great look for them. And you're obviously seeing the results on the court with just how they're getting run off the floor most nights by some of these teams and how the way they're playing is so out of step. And is that the kind of thing they want to do long-term? No. And that's, is Jim Boylan the long-term coach? I don't think he is, but I think the idea that he's just completely ruining these guys' careers based on just this one less than a full season that he's probably going to even be in the job is a little bit overblown. That's my take on it. I don't know how you feel about it, Jason.
I'm not as down. Like, I'm fine with him sticking out the year. Like, I'm not as down on, like, I don't like him at all. I think he's bad, like, whatever. Like, but I'm more shade towards you where I think it's fine if he sticks out the year, like, and he's not going to completely ruin these guys. And I guess I was going to follow up with a question to you, Sean, as well, just about, you mentioned about Fred Hoiberg, who's, he's owed whatever, the $5 million guaranteed next year if he doesn't get another job. Do you think if he does not take another job and the Bulls are on the hook for Hoiberg next year, and then they're obviously on the hook for at least $1 million to Boylan, do you think that they would go out and actually do a real coaching search and hire somebody else? Or do you think that they would cheap out and just keep Boylan because they don't want to pay three coaches?
Well, it's going to depend on how the rest of the season goes, because if it continues like this and the Bulls finish with like 15 or 16 or 17 wins on the season, which it seems like that's a direction that it's heading, especially once Robin Lopez isn't on the team anymore. And we can talk about that in a little bit. But I don't see how you would be able to look at the way that things have gone under Boylan, if they keep going the way that they're going, and say, you know what, I definitely, you know, this is the guy we need to bring back long term. And let him, you know, coach again the next season. But honestly, I have no idea what's going to happen when it comes to their coaching search. And it again, I think it's going to come down to whether Fred gets another job. I think if Fred gets another job and they're off the hook for some of that money, then definitely I would see them make, maybe, you know, actually undergoing a coaching search this summer. But then if he doesn't get another job, I honestly don't know what's going to happen. I can see that going either way. I don't really have any real information as to whether that's going to happen. Well, but I think it's more likely if Fred gets
another
job.
Well, I agree with you with that assessment, Hyken. But here's the thing. Regardless of if Fred gets another job, Boylan better not be the coach next year. If that happens, the Bulls are already pissing away another year of development for their top players, and especially if you get Zion Williamson and you're running this slow-ass post-driven offense. I mean, give me a break. Boylan cannot be the coach next year, whether Hoiberg gets another job or not. And really, it's insulting to the fans, because the fans are still showing up. Right now, if you look at home attendance in the NBA, the Bulls are second in the entire league, barely trailing the 76ers. So people are still showing up and supporting this team, but obviously there is a vocal minority, maybe even a vocal majority of Bulls fans at this point, who are just fed up with all the garbage this organization continues to feed us. The Boylan thing, to me, just pushes it over the top. I mean, there's no way this guy should be the coach next year. And even the fact that he's the coach this year, because John Paxson has some weird vendetta against Hoiberg, and that John Paxson sees Boylan apparently as a reflection of himself, and he wants to play basketball like the NBA was played in like the 1940s or 50s or whatever. It's all just so deeply messed up. And, you know, that's why you have this sense of outrage over everything the Bulls do, whether it's, you know, acquiring MCW just so they can get some cash back, or, you know, giving Boylan an extension. Like, these aren't that.
Was there really outrage over the MCW trade? Because to me, that was there's absolutely
I agree, but I'm saying that you see the level of outrage because the fan base is so fed up, and they're fed up because Boylan should not be coaching the team at all, like, just like this way.
Yeah, that was just like the initial thing. It was like when it first came off, or when that first news came across, I was like, "What the hell is this? Are you kidding me?" It's like the general, like before actually thinking about it, I feel like so many Bulls fans just have the natural reaction to be like, "What the fuck are these guys doing?" Obviously, once you realize that they were in a wave, MCW is all fine, but it's like there's just like a natural like knee jerk reaction to think the Bulls did something and it's crappy. Like the MCW thing was fine. The Justin Holiday trade was great. We were really positive on our last podcast, basically. But then stuff like this with the Boylan thing, getting their ass beat by the Warriors, just people naturally think it's bad. And then even what you mentioned, the Robin Lopez stuff. Let's go into the Robin Lopez stuff. I feel like the way that was almost kind of presented, it was reported last night by Yahoo Sports' Chris Haynes that it came out as like Bulls refused to negotiate a buyout with Robin Lopez. It kind of painted the Bulls in like almost a negative light. They're not going to do him the favor. I'm assuming that stuff was all coming from Rolo's camp, but basically Rolo wants to go to the Warriors, and it was like reported that he, like, if he does get bought out or whatever, that he would be going to the Warriors, and the Bulls won't do it. And I feel like a lot of people were like, oh, well, stupid Bulls, like they're being dicks, they're being petty, blah, blah, blah. Like, I feel like in this case, the Bulls are absolutely right to not just give away Robin Lopez for free. Like, there's still a little less than a month to the trade deadline. Like, I don't know if Robin Lopez is actually going to get like that much on a trade. Like we'll talk about that a bit more with some other stuff, but like you're not just straight up waving a guy just because whatever, if he wants to do it like before trying to trade him, like it doesn't make any sense. Sean, what do you think about the whole Robin Lopez buyout Warriors story?
Well, I don't think, first of all, that Robin Lopez is going to still be on the team in a month.
Right.
Because, yeah. we have the trade deadline is February 7th.
Yeah.
There is no, I mean, yes, I understand the impulse of, oh, you know, the Bulls should, you know, free Robin Lopez, let him go join a contender. You know, he has no use being on the Bulls. He's not going to be on the team long term. He's a veteran. He doesn't really have a role on this team that's rebuilding and is going to be bad, and he should be able to just go join a contender. Fine. Like, I get all that. But first of all, the buyout market is just crazy. Like I was talking about this a little bit on Twitter last night, and it's just kind of weird how like we're, you know, just in this place now. You know, you saw it with, you know, Tyson Chandler earlier on in the year gets a buyout and goes to the Lakers, or, you know, there are just certain, you know, there's a certain time of year where it's just assumed that, oh, all the good players on these bad teams are just going to get bought out and be able to go join a contender for free. Like that's just a place that we're at where that's just like an accepted way that things happen now, which I mean, that's here, neither here nor there, but it's just kind of weird. But now going into more specifically the Robin Lopez thing, what reason do the Bulls have to do it right now? I think it's going to get done eventually, but you know, you just saw today Woj reports that Clint Capella is out for 4 to 6 weeks. If you're the Bulls, you can now call up Houston. I don't know exactly what the trade would look like, you know, from a pieces standpoint, but you know, Houston just lost their starting center. They're trying to keep pace in the playoff run. You know, James Harden is, you know, making this MVP push. The Bulls could call the Rockets and say, hey, you just lost your starting center for the next 4 to 6 weeks. We have a very capable veteran guy who can slot in as a starting center in that short term. What will you give us for him? And Houston might be desperate enough to actually be able to say, okay, you know, we'll give you a pick or something, you know, or I don't know exactly what the trade would look like, but there's no reason for the Bulls not to hang on to Robin Lopez until the trade deadline and see if they can get something for him. And then if they can't get something for him at the deadline, then maybe you think more seriously about a buyout. But talking about it now and framing it as, oh, the Bulls are holding out on Robin Lopez because they're not going to buy him out right now so we can join the Warriors, I think that really makes no sense.
Yeah, I agree. And you mentioned the Rockets thing. Brandon Knight is sitting there making, I think, a similar salary to what Robin Lopez's Rolo is at, like 14.4 million or something like that. I think Knight might be at around there as well. Basically, I think their salaries basically almost match up. Brandon Knight's been hurt all the time. He's basically useless. I think he's played a little bit for them and he hasn't done that much. Like Brandon Knight, and he's got money. So that's the big thing is, will the Bulls be willing to take on money going into next season as well? Because I feel like Lopez for Brandon Knight and a first round pick. I mean, if the Rockets are willing to give up that first round pick, they'd probably protect it in case their season goes down the drain and they actually somehow wind up in the lottery. But like, or even if the Bulls look for a future first round pick, maybe when the Rockets maybe tail off a bit, maybe they look to the future of a few years or something like that. I feel like that kind of trade would possibly make sense if the Rockets are willing to give that first or if they're willing to give up some seconds. I'm not sure what their second round pick situation is, but like I feel like that would definitely make kind of sense. And I totally agree with you that there's no reason for the Bulls rushing into this. Like, would it be better for Robin Lopez? Probably. But like the Bulls, as like pro player as I am, like you still gotta like do your best to do what's best for the team, and just straight up letting him go to the champs just doesn't make much sense. So I'm totally agree with you on that. Ricky, are you with us on that?
I agree with you guys, but I do hope that Robin Lopez gets out of this situation eventually, because the Bulls are going nowhere. There's nothing for him here that he can achieve in his career. So I do hope Robin Lopez gets out eventually. And Robin Lopez got out today, actually, at least a little bit, because the reports from practice today, Robin Lopez was especially chippy at practice, and he was tossed. Jim Boylan had to remove him from practice, from scrimmage, so... I'm curious, what does this say about the leadership committee? And, where does the leadership committee stand at now that Justin Holliday is gone, Robin Lopez is being tossed? The student council is taking a big hit, guys.
Yeah, I don't know. And I think they kind of have to fill a couple of those spots. Maybe Chris Dunn is going to get on there. Maybe Cristiano Felicio can get, he's one of the longer tenured guys at this point. Maybe they'll, give him a spot. Maybe Chandler Hutchison will, now that he's in the starting lineup, maybe he'll be able to, throw his name into the mix. I don't know, but like, that leadership council thing is huge. Like that's going to go great for your college apps. Like that's going to look good as an extracurricular,
Guys, the fact that this is what they fed us following the mutiny reports after the Boston game, this was completely idiotic right away. Do either of you actually believe that A, the leadership committee actually exists, and B, that it has any input at this point in the season other than just being some more fucking bullshit that the front office and the head coach fed us following, the reports of the mutiny? Does anyone put any stock in the leadership committee? Because I don't.
I was going to say, I feel like we haven't heard like anything about it since it was formed. Like that, they like announced it. Oh, we got these, four or five guys on the leadership committee, blah, blah, blah. And I feel like we haven't heard like anything about it since. So I feel like it almost seems like it was just for show to be like, oh, like we're together. Or, like we got this committee that's going to help us take us through these tough times, blah, blah, blah. And like, I'm just kind of feeling like from the scene from the Bobs from Office Space, just like, what would you say you guys do here? Like, cause I don't know what they do.
Yeah, it really does seem like that was just kind of a short-term damage control thing in terms of like oh no, there was mutiny because remember the next day, like there was a whole mutiny, there was all the reports that the players were thinking about not showing up to practice, and then Jim Boylan said, no, it was my idea to do the players only meeting. Like it definitely feels like that was like the whole leadership committee was just kind of a short term, like, hey, look, we're taking steps to be more together as a team, and then you haven't heard a peep about it since then. I almost regret the game that I was there in Portland. I'm not on the beat regularly anymore, so I'm not really like in a position to ask anybody anything right now. But I almost wish I had kind of tried to follow up on the leadership committee and seen where things stand with that at the time. But I'm not really sure what where things are or how real that was.
This team is honestly the biggest joke in the entire league. I mean, the way they just continue to feed us this bullshit while the fans this has to be the most loyal fan base in the NBA. They're still continuing to pack the building every single night. I think, if you go to Bulls games lately or you look for tickets on the secondary market, there are a lot of empty seats. That building is nowhere near capacity, even though those tickets are sold. But this is why fans get so upset. It's just garbage after garbage after garbage. It's like, where do the lies stop? And you're never going to know because it's just been an onslaught of them ever since Paxson and Foreman have been in power.
So I guess I feel like this is a good transition to another just kind of weird situation with Jabari Parker. Like Jabari Parker was big offseason signing, 2-year, $40 million deal, team option on the second year. And he's been mostly out of the rotation. He returned from the rotation against the Jazz because Bobby Portis was out. We'll see moving forward. Like if Rolo's out of the picture and Jabari's still around, like maybe they make Portis the backup five and give Parker minutes until they find a deal. I know there was a rumor out there a month or a couple weeks ago about the Knicks being involved possibly in conversations, and then over the weekend another rumor out of New York that with a possible like three-team trade with Enes Kanter involved, and they were trying to find a third team. It doesn't seem like there's really anything imminent there. But like just the whole Jabari situation, I know Ricky, I think on our first pod of the new year, you were just basically like, the Bulls need to figure out, like, they need to do something with Jabari. They need to find a trade soon. They need to play him, or they need to buy him out. So like, and they're still just kind of jerking him around. And like, I don't want to feel bad for Jabari just because of all the, like, he has not held up his end of the bargain at what he's being paid either. But like, his situation just goofy as hell too. So like, they need to figure this out. Sean, were you able to talk to Jabari at all? What do you make of what's been happening with Jabari, just the Jabari Parker situation in general?
Well, I think that where it's headed is he's going to get bought out before, you know, the March 1st deadline. You know, so we'll see if he ends up signing anywhere after that. But as far as, you know, some of these trade talks, like, you know, you heard the thing about the Knicks, you heard about, you know, the Knicks and Sacramento and all this kind of stuff. Like, the problem with trading Jabari, even though he's essentially on an expiring contract where, you know, there's a team option for next year, so it's not a lot of long-term commitment, they still have to match salaries, or a team that's taking him on still has to send out matching salaries, and he's making $20 million this year. So that just makes it really hard for them to really unload that deal and get anything back without taking on long-term money, which they've been pretty clear they don't want to do. So I just don't really know where the trade is going to be between now and the trade deadline on February 7th. So I would guess that probably what ends up happening is he stays kind of in this in-between zone. The only reason he got in that Utah game was because Bobby Portis was out with the elbow thing after the Warriors game. So I still think they're probably not planning on playing him in the long term, but probably what's going to happen is, you know, they're not going to be able to find a trade for him by the deadline, and then he's going to just get bought out.
Yeah, and thanks, man. Blue Wire Network is awesome. There is a bunch of NBA pods that cover the league as a whole throughout the network. So, Jason, we got some ads to read.
That we do. Fun stuff. These are our first ad reads ever. Fun stuff. So we'll start with, we got MyPillow app. So this is obviously Jason Pat from Cash Considerations podcast at Blue Wire. And like the rest of us, you probably made a New Year's resolution. If you're planning to eat better, exercise more, be more patient, kinder, whatever, that all sounds like great stuff. It all starts with a good night's rest. Now I could always use a better night's rest. So please go to MyPillow.com and click on the 4-pack special and enter my promo code COZY, that's COZY, and you'll get 2 premium MyPillows and 2 go anywhere pillows. It's really amazing what a difference a great pillow makes. And if you go to MyPillow.com right now and click on their 4-pack, shipping is absolutely free. It's awesome. Free shipping is always great. No shipping costs. Zippo, zilch, nada. Don't forget about their 60-day money-back guarantee. There's absolutely nothing better than the gift of restorative sleep. So go to MyPillow.com, click on the 4-pack special, and use the code COZY, C-O-Z-Y, to get 2 premium MyPillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows. MyPillow.com or call 800-966-1472. And remember, my promo code can be used for any offer on MyPillow.com. And then again, that is the promo code COZY, C-O-Z-Y. Ricky, back to you.
Jason, you've heard plenty of stories about drug cartels, right?
Tons of them.
They're all over the news. But the crime ring you've probably never heard of is one of the most dangerous in the world. They're the Mennonite mob. You heard right, Jason. Mennonites. 99% of them are kind, God-fearing people, but there's one group that has smuggled millions of dollars of narcotics from Mexico to Canada. Sounds pretty crazy. Wednesday, starting January 23rd at 10, 9 Central, WGN America presents the new TV series Pure, based on true events of the Mennonite mob. The show is about Noah Funk, the newly elected Mennonite pastor who is determined to rid his community of the drug cartel, but he finds himself weighing over his head. And the good pastor, along with his wife, will do some very bad things, all in the name of protecting their family. Jason, think of Pure as Breaking Bad meets Witness makes Narcos. Wow. That's a hell of a sales pitch right there.
Dang.
Get hooked on Pure, Jason. Cash Considerations podcast listeners, Wednesdays starting January 23rd at 10, 9 Central only on WGN America. WGN America is available on DirecTV channel 307, Dish channel 239, or check your local listings for the channel in your area. We're watching Pure, Jason.
Dang, yeah, it sounds, I might have to get into that. I'm a big fan of Breaking Bad. I'll do it. Check it out. All right, so It was great to have Sean on. Finally, we had a guest. It was about time. We had
Hiken's the man.
We had talked about finally getting a guest, and it's about damn time that we got one. Hiken's a good guy. Met him plenty of times out there in Portland. Used to be in Chicago for a while, so he's a good dude. It's good to talk to him. So I guess, like I said, obviously we talked a lot about what's been going on lately these last few days. A lot of stuff going on. The Bulls obviously at a 10-33. They still got a couple games left on the road trip. I'm kind of really interested to see their next game is Tuesday night in LA against the Lakers, who have been absolute dog shit without LeBron. I'm kind of curious that, like, if the Bulls somehow do win that game, not that I'm totally want them to because we're all aboard the tank, but if they do win that game, like, I'm really curious to see if Luke Walton gets fucking canned, because like the Lakers just lost to the Cavs last night, which the Cavs were on like a 12 game losing streak. They had the worst defense of all time, and the Lakers didn't even break 100 on them. This Bulls team beat the Cavs ass in Cleveland a couple weeks ago, and the Lakers were just awful without LeBron, without Rondo. So I think it's gonna be a really interesting game. And I know I was fighting with some Lakers fans like last week, because I was talking shit about their young core, about it not being that good. And then the next day after I was talking crap, because I think this was before, I can't remember what game it was before, but I was talking crap. I like posted a box score about how they were all terrible. And then like the next game, like Ingram went off, like Lonzo went off. So I think it'll be interesting to see. Just like, I feel like the Bulls and Lakers young cores have been kind of compared about who's got the brighter future in terms of their young guys. So I think it'll be really interesting to see it, because like I said, the Lakers have been really struggling. What do you think about those Lakers young guys compared to what the Bulls have?
I think that I was totally wrong about Brandon Ingram. I really liked Brandon Ingram in that draft. I was buying him as, at the time, the first pick, and that was just totally wrong. So I'll fess up to that. You cover the draft. If you have a job as someone who gives takes, sometimes you're going to mess up, and I really screwed up with Brandon Ingram. His shooting just hasn't translated, and that's really sabotaged his entire game until he can figure out that three-point shot, which he was a 40% three-point shooter at Duke on decent volume. I remember my buddy John Charks writing something that, like, you know, even in a worst-case scenario, Brandon Ingram's like a 6'9 Buddy Hield. Well, now we've seen Buddy Hield has been torching the Nets for Sacramento. He's been one of my favorite players to watch in the whole league this year in the same draft class. Brandon Ingram just really struggling. Still only 21 years old, I think, but it hasn't gone well. And it just sort of shows, you know, while we all love rebuilding through the draft, I think that, you know, that's what fans want to do. That's obviously what the Bulls' plan is right now. There's just no guarantees, man. Like, the Lakers got the second pick in the draft.
3 years in a row.
And then they signed the greatest player of all time. And they're still, you know, a middling team in the West without any real path to contention unless they're able to get another superstar. So just the Lakers, I don't know. It's like, unless Ingram rediscovers the shot, they're going to be in a tough position until they add another superstar. I think anyone sort of realizes that at this point. The Bulls do have only one game after that at the end of the road trip where they're in Denver on Thursday the 17th. They're going to lose that game by like 45.
Bulls were competitive against Denver in Chicago. The Nuggets did not play well that game. They lost in like a last second, like put back by, I think, Paul Millsap in like overtime. Like, yeah, Wendell Carter had like his one of the best games of his rookie season, and that was a fun game. But yeah, in Denver, like end of a road trip in altitude against a team that's playing really well, and they've been getting healthy. Like, that's got the makings of an absolute beatdown.
You know, the Bulls right now, 10-33. This week was just terrible. A couple people tweeted at me that, me and you, but mostly me, being a little bit more optimistic on the last podcast, sort of cursed this week from the very start. Basically, my optimism is all geared around the point that, like, the only way this thing's going to get better anytime soon is if they land the number one pick and get Zion. And if nothing else, at least they're giving themselves a chance for that to happen. It's not a great plan. They're going to need to get lucky for it to pay off. But if they get Zion, everything changes overnight. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to make a lot of money off Zion Williamson if he comes to the Bulls. And that would immediately reinvigorate this franchise. So,
get to the tankathon standings.
Tankathon, this is your typical tankathon standings update. at the Cash Considerations podcast. The Bulls would be number two right now at 10-33. The only team worse is Cleveland at 9-35. The Bulls are tied with the Knicks. Phoenix has 11 wins. Atlanta has 13 wins. Again, the Bulls at 10-33. So they're going to be somewhere in the top five. Man, it would be nice if they could get in the top three, because I think the top three teams this year all have a 14% chance to get the number one pick. If you're fourth, you have a 12.5% chance. And if you're fifth, you have a 10.5% chance. So, you know, the way the Bulls turn this thing around is if they hire a real coach, you know, once again, someone who could sort of be on the cutting edge of modern coaching techniques, the way Thibodeau was once back in the day. Thibodeau hasn't been able to adjust, but, you know, the reason that he was so successful early in his Bulls tenure, yeah, he had very good talent, but also, like, the league had not caught up to Thibodeau at that point. He was on the cutting edge of, you know, modern defense, or what was modern defense. The Bulls need to find that type of coach again, because the way they're playing, Jason, is just absolute garbage. Like, if they somehow get Zion, there's no way they can keep playing boiling ball, where they're refusing to shoot three-pointers, where they're playing quote-unquote inside-out, where they're pounding the ball through the post. How many times have we seen the ball go into Robin Lopez out of timeouts? Jason, this is completely ridiculous. And it almost feels like Boylan's skating a bit on how bad he is, because people are, you know, either more worried about Chicago baseball free agency with Manny Machado maybe going to the White Sox, with the Cubs maybe making some sort of quiet pursuit of Bryce Harper, or, you know, Cubs ownership deciding to spend all their money on horrible Republican politicians instead of paying Bryce Harper. And then we also have, you know, the Bears hangover too, and the Cody Parkey redemption tour and all that garbage. But dude, this game against Utah that the Bulls played on Saturday night, Utah took 45 three-pointers. The Bulls took 20.
Yeah, so I mean, going back to that Blazers game where Sean was at, the first half, the Bulls were kind of playing the style I wanted. They played faster. They were clearly trying to – I watched all the game. I did not see the Warriors game, thank God, and I didn't really see that much of the Jazz game either. I taped it, but I was out, and then I just didn't get around to watching it because they lost. But I read up on what happened and all that stuff. But I watched the whole Blazers game, and to start, like, they got off to a nice start. They were competitive. They were playing quicker. They were shooting some threes. So, like, they did end up getting blown out, like, in the fourth quarter. So obviously, just like Sean mentioned, like, the talent gap, it took over. But, like, we've seen the signs. Sometimes with the Pacers game, they did it as well. Like, we've seen them be competitive with some pretty good teams while playing the style that we want them to play. But then, like, yeah, but then, and like you mentioned, the Jazz game, like, and you also mentioned that, like, Boylan always hammers, like, the points in the paint talk. But it's like the points, like, yeah, it's great, like, attacking the rim, like, that's great. But they don't get to the foul line ever, and they don't shoot threes. So, like, when the Jazz shoot 45 threes, and, like, you keep going under screens, and Kyle Korver's hitting a bunch of threes, Donovan Mitchell is hitting threes, Joe Ingles hit a three right in Lowry's face and was, like, waving goodbye, like, just like that, when you're getting just outscored by that much from behind the 3-point line, it's just hard to make up, because it's just the basic math. And, like, we've hammered this home how, like, Zach LaVine is a good 3-point shooter. His numbers aren't that great this year, but, like, he can make tough threes. Like, we don't always need LaVine. And that was one of the things in the Blazers game that I really noticed. Like, he started really hot, and he was like 6 of 10 from the field. And then in the second half, he was getting frustrated, not getting calls on drives, but he just kept driving the basket, like, trying to draw foul calls, like, throwing up ugly garbage. Instead of doing that, like, work yourself into some open three-pointers and do that a bit more. Take more threes. They got to get Lowry more clean looks from three. Like, some of this is on the players. It's not all on Boylan, but, like, it clearly is the philosophy where he wants them taking more shots in the paint than shooting threes, and they just need to do a better job of just, like, again, they don't need to be playing super fast, but they need to push when they need to, create more open threes, and the players need to take more threes. It's just as simple as that. Because, like, I mean, like I said, I didn't watch the Warriors game, but, like, they were down, like, 10 points within the first, whatever, like, 90 seconds, because Klay Thompson buried 3 3-pointers in there. It's like they were playing, like, a different sport than the Warriors. Obviously, it is the Warriors. Like, that's the gold standard of the league right now. But, like, it's just amazing when you watch the Warriors play compared to the Bulls. It's a clown show. It just shows you just how far the Bulls have to go to be a consistent, just a team that could consistently contend against the best teams in the league.
Forget the talent for a second. This philosophy is just completely insane. Like, what the hell are the Bulls thinking playing this brand of basketball? You could legitimately pick any nerd off basketball Twitter, and he would be running a more modern philosophy than what Jim Boylan does, say, for our man, Mr. Scout dude who's been attacking everyone on Bulls Twitter. I guess we don't really need to get into that. Fuck that guy. And yeah, like just the way they're playing basketball right now, dude, is just completely ridiculous. I don't know why the fans would have any faith in John Paxson and Gar Foreman to hire the correct coach. In terms of the draft, as I'm evaluating this draft class, Zion is on a tier all by himself.
Right.
Zion is tier one. I would say the gap between him and the second best player in this draft is so wide that there's no one in tier two. There's no one in tier three, maybe tier four. Then you can start talking about Ja Morant, RJ Barrett, guys who have some combination of a high floor and a high ceiling. But to me, dudes who just have like holes in their game, who are not going to move the needle for this franchise immediately in any significant way. You know, there is something to the idea of just, you know, if you keep hitting enough doubles in the draft, you could build a pretty solid little team. I mean, the Bulls did that once upon a time with Kirk Heinrich, Ben Gordon, Luol Deng. That was a team that was pretty fun to watch. You threw Nocioni in there, who they acquired through the draft. It's always fun when you get a homegrown team.
Yeah, for sure.
But the problem is, if they don't get Zion, dude, like, what the hell is their long-term plan? Because they're just going to be so deeply screwed. They really are going to be.
Right. I mean, I guess, like, they'll have cap space to throw at somebody. They're not going to get a superstar this summer. They make a play for Anthony Davis at some point.
Davis isn't going to re-sign here, even if they trade for him.
I know. Like, I mean, like I said, well, I mean, besides signing, maybe they try to sign him, whatever, what is that, 2020, 2021, whatever the hell it is. Like, I feel like trying to get in position to have a chance at him probably is one of the plans here. Probably not a great plan because it probably won't happen. But, I mean, I guess you have to keep that option open. You have to keep that open. Like, you want to swing big. Like, we complain about not swinging big enough. Like, they have to at least keep that open. And like I said, they have the flexibility with the cap space. But, like, again, I don't know who they're going to spend it on. Like, well, obviously, we can talk about that more down the road as we get closer to summer. But, like, I mean, they really need some of these young guys to really start playing a little bit better. Like, obviously, Lowry's in a funk. Levine's numbers look great, but like his defense has just been so bad.
The defense
has taken a huge step back. Just the team defense, like they got off. One of the selling points of Boylan when he first started was, well, like the offense sucks, but like the defense has been like they've gotten grittier. They've played better defense. The defense has been awful the last couple weeks now since like basically that Raptors game. This whole road trip, they've been getting torched. And I think their defensive rating under Boylan might be worse than it now was under Hoiberg. And like obviously, again, this is. With all the basically, they're mostly healthy. Their core is basically there, and now the defense is also bad. Like the offense has been bad, the defense has now been bad. Like it's all been bad. And obviously, lately, like this road trip is really tough competition. It's going to happen, but like we also saw them get blown out at home by the Magic. We saw them get blown out at home by the Nets. Like you just like at some point, like again, like I don't want to put it totally on Boylan. As much as Boylan might suck, like at some point, these players are going to have to show that they're actually worth. Being around for a long time, and while we do have some optimism about some of these guys, I like Lowry. Like Wendell looks like a solid player. Like Levine is a talented offensive player. At some point, they're going to have to come together and play together as well as a team, or they're going to have to start making big changes. Like I feel like,
all right, but like, here's the thing. So sorry to interrupt you, but
oh no, go ahead.
I have
go
a question ahead. For you.
Yeah.
So Hyken says that he doesn't think that Boylan is doing long term damage to the Bulls' young core. Fair. Totally fair. But how about
that? Yeah, I don't think so.
Can you evaluate the young core while they're playing this type of basketball? Because literally fucking no one plays this way, dude. Like, this is some 1950s-ass basketball. So how do you know how good Lauri Markkanen is?
Oh, I don't know. Way?
How do you know how good Zach LaVine can be when he's playing in a system with no structure that's trying to limit him from shooting threes? You got the coach fucking applauding every game when he's not taking three-pointers. I mean... Give me a break, dude. This thing is so broken right now that you can't even evaluate the young guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of, like, you can evaluate, I think, the defense a little bit, I guess. And, like, Levine's defense is still bad. So, like, that I feel like that's just going to be a problem there. Like, in terms of offense, the concerns are definitely there. Like, I don't want to make any judgments on these guys. I just want to say it's partially on them, at least a little bit. But, like, I definitely don't want to make any judgments. I have been very skeptical about Chris Dunn for a while. I'm skeptical about Levine's overall package. I think Wendell's going to be a really nice solid player. Like, I don't think he'll be like a star player, but I think he's going to be at worst a really solid two-way NBA player. And then I feel like a lot might swing on how Lowry, like if Lowry develops into like a legitimate poor man's Dirk, like great. But if he's just like kind of like another guy, like he's kind of been lately, then that's like a problem. And like, and that's going to be what these next, like the next, hopefully the rest of this year, hopefully Boylan lets them loose a little bit more. Hopefully we get, they can build on something going into next year, because next year is going to be huge. Next year will be Lowry's third year. You'll have Wendell's second year, and then Chris Dunn will be in year four. If they don't believe in Chris Dunn, which I don't, I feel like there's been some rumblings out there that they don't really believe in them that much. Like he could be on his way out next season if he doesn't take a legitimate step forward. I mean, like if the Bulls don't take a step forward next season, I feel like LaVine could be on the trade block depending on what's going on. Like, so they need to build something for the rest of this year. And I do agree that with Boylan in place, that could be difficult. Hopefully he realizes the error of his ways. Maybe the front office will step in. But again, the front office seems to like what he's doing. Like you mentioned that like Boylan seems like an extension of Paxton. So like, I don't know if anything's going to change. So like they just, it had like, obviously we want them to lose. We want them to get this top pick, but we need to see something better. We can't see them getting embarrassed every night. And even like the Jazz game, while it was close, like they only lost by eight, they were close going into the fourth quarter. The starters weren't any good. They got smoked. Like Donovan Mitchell was like a plus 20. Gobert was like a plus 19. So like when the Jazz's best players were out there, the Bulls got smoked. It was like Rolo was a plus eight, and like Jabari had a nice stretch that got him back in the game. So like we need to see this young court, so this starting group play a little bit better after this road trip, because I don't expect much more of this road trip. Maybe against the Lakers, which could be a little better. The Nuggets will get their ass beat. But like after this road trip, they have a few easier games. We need to see them start to build a little more chemistry, because otherwise, like, there's just not going to be that much optimism heading into the offseason, especially with this coaching situation up in the air. And just like, I mean, I totally agree with you that Boylan should not be the coach next year. I'm fine with it for this year, whatever. It happens. It's how it usually works. But hopefully we can get a little more optimism back. After, listen, last weekend we were so optimistic, or last time we were so optimistic, and like now it's like going back into the train. So hopefully we can get a little more optimism back, even if they are still losing. Because again, at this point, like the goal is getting Zion.
Jason, what's this season about? It's about development, right? You can't develop when you're playing basketball like it's 1952. I mean, the entire thing is a sham. It's completely ridiculous that they're playing this way. And I know a lot of people have tuned out the Bulls. Me and you are liable to do it too. I mean, I was snowboarding all weekend. I had to catch up on the games, catch up on the news. You know, you were talking about how you were out on Saturday night during the
game. Yeah, I had plans. I'm Friday night. I was home, but then like, and I was going to watch some. I had taped the Warriors game. Like I was going to watch some of it, but and they were down by 25 after the first quarter. So like, I'm not watching this. Like what? I was like, I got a few texts. So before I could even put it on, like they were down by 30 damn points. Like I'm not going to watch this crap. Like if they make it close, I'll watch it later. And then like I said, I was out during the Jazz game. I had plans with friends. So like, I'm definitely not going out of my way to watch Bulls basketball, because like, while I am interested in how these young guys develop, like when they're just not competing half the time, like it's hard for us to watch. Like we're going to try to stick with it as well as we can over this second half of the season. But like, they need to make it a little easier for us and give us something interesting to talk about and not just bitching about them. Because we've said this before, like we don't want to be constantly complaining about them to make us sound like just complete whiners and pessimists. But like, when you're 10-33 and you're losing games by 30 half the time and you're getting blown out every other night, like that's what's going to happen. We're going to complain. So like, I don't know, man.
This whole season is such a lie. It's like, it's about development, but you can't develop when you're playing basketball this way. It's all completely insane. Everything that we've been writing and saying about the Bulls for the last few years, you know, covering this team in a negative hue, I almost wondered at times if I've been negative enough, just how deeply broken this is. So Jim Boylan, I mean, in my opinion, he does not deserve on merit to coach another NBA game. There's no way. I mean, he's garbage. The system that they're running is completely insane. When you have Doug Collins, of all fucking people, telling you to push the pace, which is what happened recently, John Paxson and Doug Collins were consoling in Boylan that he needs to start playing faster. I mean, dude, this is just so, so broken. If they get Zion, it was worth it. I think there's a chance that they could hire, you know, a good head coach I think that that's possible because they did once hire Tom Thibodeau. Paxton and Foreman have been pretty decent in the draft. We think that their last two major picks, Carter and Markkanen, should be building blocks for this team moving forward, but it's impossible to evaluate those guys during a year of development while they're playing this backwards-ass game. And, dude, if they don't get Zion, I mean, Jesus, I don't really see any path to contention for them. I mean, the Bulls will sell some false hope in free agency. I lived through the Kevin Garnett rumors. I lived through, the Amari Stoudemire rumors, the Kobe rumors. The Bulls are not getting Anthony Davis. I'm just going to say that right now. And if they do get him, if they do trade for him, he's going to leave. Because this franchise is just so broken from the top down. It's not going to happen. So if you're one of those see red people who think that, you know, this thing's going to be miraculously saved, the more evidence we get on Boylan is the more evidence we get on the front office that they just don't know how to acquire talent, how to coach, and how to sort of manifest a team that can win in today's NBA. And with that, I'm done. So you can close this out if you want.
And I said, is that like a mic drop moment there? Just like, man, that is bleak. That is a bleak picture. But I mean, right now, like, it's tough to be optimistic. We will absolutely, we'll have to see. We're going to have to be patient. We're going to hope for Zion Williamson. If they don't get Zion Williamson, we're going to have to just hope and pray that whoever they do get is better than we expect. But so again,
I'm going to say real quick, starting next week, I'm going to start doing a draft prospect of the week where I'll shine a light on one prospect every week. Right. I'm not totally prepared to do that right now, at least in terms of the amount of detail I want to go into. But we'll start it next week. And, that's what the rest of this season is going to be about, unfortunately, because as long as the Bulls are continue playing this ridiculous Boylan ball, there's not going to be much for us to talk about with the team because we can't even see if the young core is developing.
Yeah, that's basically it. So yeah, we got Bulls Lakers tomorrow, and then one more game with Nuggets finish the trip, and then they'll finally come home for a bit. So we'll see how things goes. I think that's it for me. It sounds like that it's for you. This was fun. It was fun to finally have a guest. Thanks again to Sean Hyken for coming on. Then you can follow Sean at Hyken, @HIGHKIN. It was great to have him on. He does work at a bunch of places, mainly Bleacher Report. And for that, this has been Cash Considerations Podcast. I'm just Jason. Ricky, take it easy.
I'm gone, Jason. I'm out. I walked away. I'm so mad. We'll catch you later. Bye.